Well, big thanks to Ronnie Renfro and Tom Richards, who get things started at 1 o'clock every Monday through Friday with the R&R show. And today I got to sneak in the studio and enjoy what they were doing. Of course, they got me down here from my home on the
Hi, I'm Matt Harlan, and you're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
By Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 6 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT, 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org HD1 on the internet. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on fabulous and fantastic journeys before returning us safely to the present. In a few days, we will move from the summer season into fall. September, marking the end of the summer for us, often serves as a point to pause and think about our lives. Our guest tonight, Corey May, is going to tell us about his life with a series of stories about realizations and reflections. Corey May is a storyteller from Iowa City, Iowa. Early in his life, he studied political science and worked as a legislative correspondent for a U.S. senator. Since then, he has worked in retail sales and management. His passion, however, is communications, and he has a long list of storytelling and speaking accomplishments. For one, Corey has competed in the World Championship of Public Speaking with Toastmasters. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Mary. This is a privilege and an honor to be here with you today.
I was so excited to find you in a list of storytellers, and I think that you have a particularly wonderful set of stories about yourself, about your realizations and reflections of yourself. It's absolutely perfect for September. So what's the first story you have for us?
Oh, the first story, as we all get to know me, this story is called Superman, and it reflects over my life about a very important message that I think everyone needs to hear. The smell of buttered popcorn is dependable. The feeling of a seat underneath you is dependable. But whatever comes up on the screen, not so much. I'm sitting in a movie theater expecting to be wowed. But Hollywood has let me down so many times, even as a child. I'm 7 years old, and every day after school, I run home to see the adventures of Superman. I believe in Superman. He can do anything. I should be doing my homework, but I believe. Clark Kent wears glasses. I wear glasses. Clark Kent has a fedora. I have a fedora. Let me let you in on a secret. I'm Superman. But I don't have a costume. Mom and Dad won't buy me my underoos. I don't know what's wrong with them, but I have a cape. It's a raincoat, actually, but it's the wrong color. It's yellow. It should be red, but this is yellow. Mom and Dad won't buy me a red one, so I take it to school and I leave it in the lost and found. Mom and Dad are going to buy me a new one. It's going to be red. My plan is working. It comes. It has buttons up the front. It is red. It looks like a cape. I need just to tighten the top button, and we're ready to go. It's time for recess. I go to the bathroom and take off my glasses. Time to hit the playground. As I make it out to the playground, I spot two girls up on the jungle gym. Clearly, they need my help. I climb up. I'll save you. Who are you? I'm Superman. You can't be Superman. Superman's white. As I climb down, it hurt. And as my feet hit the ground, I realized I'd found my kryptonite. And after school, I rush home as fast as I can to see if there's anyone who looks like me in the Adventures of Superman. I watch and I watch, and there's no one that looks like me. I'm 7 years old. It's 1974. I live in Iowa City, and I've just learned a lesson about truth, justice, and the American way. And I stop believing. 44 years later, I'm in the movie theater. I've got my popcorn and I feel the seat underneath me, and I'm ready to see Black Panther. Hollywood's let me down so many times, I don't believe. The lights go down and the film comes up, and I see Wakanda for the very first time. I can't believe this. Now, that seven-year-old boy that's inside me begins to believe again. Now, I see more brown people in this movie than I have at my family reunion. And let me tell you something. Brown is such a bland word. There are 128 shades of brown. Chestnut, mocha, caramel, walnut. And I see all those colors on the screen ahead of me, and I believe. After sitting through that, what I learned was this. While I live in Iowa City, I am in Wakanda, and I don't want to leave Wakanda. And what I've learned is this. There is a place for me if I only believe. Thanks.
Wow, Corey, you embody the power of story. You took us with you to Wakanda.
I hoped to.
Along with a wonderful story about childhood and realizations. And I think underlying that, the importance of having a figure that looks like you.
Oh, absolutely.
Other people to recognize you in. I mean, you could recognize yourself in Superman already, but other people couldn't.
Very much so. The representation is something that's so important to me. Growing up in Iowa, being a Black person in Iowa, seeing people who have blazed the way before and also leaving a path for those people who are coming behind me is significant and very important to me. So that's the reason why these stories are so organic for me.
And important for you to tell other people. For us
absolutely.
To walk in your shoes. Did anybody in your family realize that you were looking for a Black hero?
Oh, yes. That reminds me of another story.
Okay.
No, that's my dad. He's just told me that I can't have a G.I. Joe. It costs too much. It's $7.50. And Dad's talking back there about something he calls economics. I don't know what economics is, and I don't care what economics is. I just want a G.I. Joe. And it's not just any G.I. Joe. I live in Iowa City, And all the G.I. Joes here look like my classmates. Blonde hair, blue eyes, red hair, green eyes, dark hair, dark eyes. But there's none that looks like me. I want a G.I. Joe that looks like me. It's the summertime, and my auntie is visiting. My auntie, Eileen. Now, she's my dad's older sister. She says, Corey, if you come with me to Gary, Indiana, I will get you the G.I. Joe that you want. Promise? I promise. My decision's already made. I fly up the stairs as fast as I can. As fast as my little seven-year-old body can take me. And I grab the largest suitcase that I can grab. And I throw everything that I can possibly throw into it. T-shirts, underwear, socks, books, toothpaste, toothbrush. The suitcase isn't big enough for my older sister, so she gets left behind. But I will throw in one winter boot because you never know what happens in the Midwest. I hop on it and I latch it shut. I drag it behind me. It weighs almost as much as I do. And I realize that the only way that I can get this down the stairs is to ride it like a cowboy. So I hop on and I ride it down the stairs. Kadonk, 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 kadonk. Mom and Dad can't believe I'm going to leave them for this G.I. Joe. But Aunt Eileen knows. And she helps me carry that heavy suitcase out through the garage to the back of her brown Cadillac. Let me tell you something about Aunt Eileen. She has been a teacher in Gary, Indiana for years. And she has two voices. She has my auntie voice, which I absolutely love. And she has her teacher voice. I don't like that very much. But as she straps me in and kisses me on the forehead, she calls me her little prince. And I like that. And suddenly, we're off. And as we ride, she takes me to McDonald's. She tells me it's going to be 3 or 4 hours until we get from Iowa City to Gary, Indiana. And we stop at McDonald's, and I get my first McDonald's cheeseburger and fries, and I get a vanilla shake. And all of a sudden, I fall asleep. And when I wake up, I'm in Gary, Indiana. She helps me with my suitcase, and I carry it into the house with her help. I get unpacked. And we watch a little bit of television. She makes me a little snack. She kisses me on the forehead again and calls me her little prince and tells me, you better get ready for bed because tomorrow's the big day. And she's right. So I wash my face and I brush my teeth. And I get into my pajamas and I say my prayers because tomorrow is so important. I wake up and the clock says it's 6:15. By 6:30, I've washed my face and brushed my teeth, and eaten a bowl of cereal, and I wait. Aunt Eileen doesn't wake up until 9 o'clock. She doesn't speak to me until she's had her coffee at 9:15, and we don't leave until 9:45. She helps me into the car, straps me in, and she says, let's go to the first toy store. The first toy store is nice. They've got a lot of nice toys. And I locate the aisle with all the G.I. Joes. And I go through all of them. They all look like my classmates. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Red hair, green eyes. Dark hair, dark eyes. None that look like me. And Aunt Eileen says, all right, that's okay. Let's go to the second store. And I hold her hand and she is calm and patient. And I love this time with her. Off to the second store. And this one's bigger. I walk in and I look around and I find the aisle with the G.I. Joes. Again, I walk down that aisle and I check all of them. And there's even more. None of them that look like me. They all look like my classmates back in Iowa City. And right now, I'm starting to have a little bit of problems because we've had two stores and none that look like me. Auntie Eileen, being a teacher, recognizes that I'm starting to panic. And she puts her arm around me and hugs me close to her hip and says, Corey, we've got another store to go to. Be patient. I'm not really sure what patience has to do with this, because I want this G.I. Joe. I want a G.I. Joe that looks like me. Right now. And here we go. To the third toy store. And this one's huge. And it's got a giant giraffe outside of it. And as I walk in, I'm in heaven. There's bicycles and swimming pools. I don't know how to swim. And the bikes are too big for me. And there's a lot of stuff in here. Focus. Focus. I want a G.I. Joe. I want a G.I. Joe that looks like me. And so we find that aisle. And I walk down that aisle. It is long and tall. And I'm going through all those G.I. Joes. And there's none that look like me. And my eyes are big and tears are starting to form. And I'm starting to sniffle. And Aunt Eileen sees I'm about to melt down. She puts her arms around me and says, "Corey, everything's going to be okay." And what I hear is, "I promised you something and I'm not going to get it for you." And my heart is breaking in two. They don't have this G.I. Joe that I want. And just a couple seconds later, the attendant comes around the corner and Aunt Eileen says in her auntie voice, "My nephew needs a G.I. Joe that looks like him." And the attendant says, "Well, all the G.I. Joes are out. All the G.I. Joes are out here." And then my auntie uses her teacher voice and says, "Why don't you check in the back?" And maybe that attendant was one of auntie's students, because she did exactly as she was told and she behaved. And she walked down that aisle kind of stiffly. And I believe that I'm not going to get this G.I. Joe. And Auntie Eileen has broken her promise, and adults never break their promises. And then from the back, through my tears, the woman starts walking toward us. And it takes her forever to reach us. And she's got one arm behind her back. And she pulls it out. And behind her back and in her hand, she's got a G.I. Joe that looks like me. Dark hair, dark eyes, dark skin. This is my G.I. Joe. And now I'm happier than I've ever been. And I wait until Auntie Eileen's paid for it. And then I open it up in the car. And Auntie Eileen straps me in. She kisses me on the forehead. She calls me her little prince. And I kiss my G.I. Joe on the forehead. And I call him my little prince. And we drive back to her house. And it's time for a snack. And I have my snack and Joe has his snack. And Joe and I play in every single corner of Auntie Eileen's house and we kill some dust bunnies. When it's time for television, Auntie Eileen sits next to me and G.I. Joe sits next to me. This is great. It's time for me to wash my face and brush my teeth for the night. I do all that. I get in my pajamas and I get down on my knees and I say my prayers and I hug G.I. Joe, because tonight, at last, I can dream. Thank you.
That is a beautiful story. That's a beautiful story. You know, there are the portraits of the presidents and their spouses. And when the portrait of Michelle Obama was unveiled and some of the docents were taking children through to see it at the National Gallery, there was this wonderful picture in the newspaper of this little Black girl looking up with such amazement in her eyes, seeing somebody like her, who was the wife of a president. I imagine you with that expression on your face.
Yes, it's so important to be able to see someone like you doing something so that you have something to hang your dreams on. We take that for granted, having something to hang our dreams on. And sometimes we end up being that for someone else. And sometimes it's simply something as simple as a child's toy that helps us hang our dreams on it.
Yes, and people don't realize that. Let's go back to Black Panther, because that's also such an important moment along the same theme.
Right.
Chadwick Boseman was Absolutely fantastic in that. Wonderful actor.
Yes. I love Chadwick Boseman. Love him to death. And part of the there was a kindred spirit thing that happened with Chadwick Boseman, and I'll relate that in the next story. This one's called 54. I'm 39 years old when I confront my dad's killer. It's 2006, and it's a day that's been 28 years in the making. I hate you. It's time to fight. I remove my clothes, swallow the Vicodin, and slip away. Now, my dad died of cancer of the liver and colon when I was 11. I'm married and have five children under the age of 11. Today, I have my first colonoscopy. Most people get their first colonoscopy at 50, but lucky me, I get mine at 39 because I'm at risk. For 28 years, I've lived in fear. This is real. This is visceral. This is in my gut, like the creature from Alien. Let's go back to the summer of 1978. I've just turned 11. Mom and dad call my older sister and me up into our living room on the red couch where dad and I usually watch professional wrestling on Saturdays and Sundays. They look serious. Dad says, I have cancer. I might have 2 minutes, 2 days, 2 months, but not multiple years. I don't know what my sister does. I know my dad's dying. And I react to dad's news on gut instinct. Fight, flight, or freeze. I can't fight. I'm too little. A part of me freezes here at 11. Spock from Star Trek helps me cope a little. I run toward Spock, cold, analytical, safe. I can't feel anything. I can't control anything, but I can understand. I climb up on the couch downstairs and pull out the medical encyclopedias I'm going to need. I look up the words I don't know. Stage four, cancer. Tumor. Dad's was grapefruit sized. Metastasis. It's all over his insides. Terminal. I know what that means. I can't feel anything because if I do, I'm going to die. What I couldn't understand was why. In less than 6 months, he's gone. Dad was 54. So old to me at 11. I can't cry. I can't cry. Now I'm 39. The colonoscopy results come back clean. I'm so lucky that I get to have another one in 5 years. Yay! That one's clear. I'm 49. I've had stomach problems. Every twitch, pinch, cramp, or pain worries me. I'm paying attention into what I put into me as well as what comes out of me. Yuck. Did I inherit the alien in my gut? This time, the doctor removes a precancerous polyp, my first. This isn't a milestone I want to have. A memory surfaces. Jake, one of my dad's best friends, tells me, I spoke to your dad just after he found out that he had cancer. His only question to me was, how will I tell my kids? Well, how am I going to tell my kids? I'm relating to my dad a little bit more. I'm still the 11-year-old who doesn't know how to feel. Spock isn't here to help. I only tell my oldest two, 19-year-old Madeline and 20-year-old Xavier. Kids, the doctor removed a precancerous polyp from my colon. Madeline is silent, and Xavier says, that's a good thing, isn't it, Dad? And I can hear they don't understand my fear. I stay strong for them inside. The 11-year-old me is terrified and can't tell anyone. Is the alien inside us? Now, I'm almost 54, the same age as Dad was when he died. I see his face in my mirror. My children have had me longer than I had Dad. I've kept them at arm's length long enough. It's hard to hug them with all of this baggage that I'm carrying. I'm tired and I want to put it down. I'd like to be closer. I want to be the dad that I couldn't have. As soon as I get to 54, our lives will start all over again, I promise. This isn't my finish line. I'm saving up for my daughter's weddings. I'm getting ready to gain a daughter-in-law. I'll be present for four college graduations, and I'm emotionally ready for grandchildren, family vacations, and Sunday dinners. It's time for the 11-year-old who can't feel to find peace and finally heal. Now, that happened 2 years ago, and now I'm 56, and this feels good. It's strange for me, Mary, to feel like I've outlived my parent, one of my parents. But yeah, that's a really strange feeling. And when I got to that age, I just felt like I could exhale. Like life suddenly changed for me. So when I feel like when I watch Chadwick Boseman, there's a connection there that a lot of people don't have.
Yes. Gosh, he was so young.
Right.
And he was so talented, and he didn't let on that anything was going on, even though I think during some of the movie's filmings, he was being treated.
Right. And
I was so shocked when it happened because I was so excited and waiting, you know, for the next movie and the next movie and a new movie star that I could follow and that I could tell my kids, yes, I know who Chadwick Boseman is.
We're in the same place on that. I watched Black Panther multiple times. I have it. I watch it anytime it's on television, even though I have it stuck away for streaming, I'll watch it. And I watch it like I'm a child. Even though I know everything that's going to happen, I still watch it because it resonates deep within me.
Oh, yes. It's wonderfully done. And he's a wonderful actor. And we definitely lost him way too soon. But I'm so glad that you are shielding your body from the alien.
Another movie I saw at a way too young age.
Yeah, oh, that's a great movie. Yes, that's one of my favorite movies also. But that's a great way to describe it. I'm actually a cancer doctor, and people feel as though they've been betrayed by their bodies when they find out they have cancer. And, you know, for an 11-year-old to have to understand all these words and to learn later how hard it was for your father to tell his kids has to be something that helps you get to know your father again in a different way.
Absolutely. We often don't talk enough about the emotional communication necessary to break that news to one's community circle.
Yes.
Sometimes we're of the mindset that we must be stoic and just not tell anything. When you need to express it and then let people deal with it, you can't sugarcoat it because you're in the fight of your life. And it's important. It's important to share that and be in community for that.
Yes. And with your children, and they get to know you better. You know, we always talk about how we understand our parents better as we become parents. And you can understand better how much, you know, $7 meant, you know, to a family, you know, way back when. And then on the other hand, you understand through the eyes of an adult what it meant to find a Black G.I. Joe. To you, which your aunt obviously understood for you.
Oh yeah, she got it. She was way smart.
Yes, she sounds like it, and I love your transitions between her auntie voice and her teacher voice, and that strikes terror in my heart. I went to a Catholic school, and those nuns they never had an auntie voice. This has been a great set of stories. We're going to take a short break from our realizations and reflections from Corey May for station identification. We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio, also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org HD1. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Yes, just visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at houstonstorytellers.org, where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Well, join that same Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab at their website and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap. The next story swap will be September 26th, 7 p.m. Central Time, Zoom, of course, and the theme is called Fall of All Sorts. So you can fall for fall. You can also find other exciting events on the calendar, such as the next meeting of the San Antonio Storyteller Association on the first Wednesday of every month. That's a hybrid event with both in-person and Zoom attendance. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find them at TejasStorytelling.com. And again, you can find both in-person and Zoom or hybrid events around the state on their calendar. So I have to say that's been one of the gifts of the pandemic, is that we've been able to reach out on Zoom while virtual. It allows us to reach into other storytelling venues. That's been very exciting for me. But speaking of storytelling venues, we have The Moth back live in Houston at Warehouse Live. The Story Slam is held on the second Tuesday of the month. The next one up is October 10th. And the theme, oh, no, it's not Halloween or scary stuff. It's adulting. So check out themoth.org live storytelling events and their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on their event and to buy tickets. So now let's get back to Corey May with stories about realizations and reflections. Corey, you took us on quite a journey from all the way from childhood to adulthood, a long journey. Tell us more about your life and other people in it. You mentioned you have children. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, thanks for asking. There are stories that happen to us all the time, and they happen to us every day. And sometimes you just have to look and see them. This one's something called Sometime It Chafes. I'm very lucky that she swiped right on me, because in 2017, she swiped right, and we don't get together until it's 2019. This is the first time I'm going to meet Zoe. And Zoe lives in Vancouver, British Columbia. I live in Iowa. We've corresponded, and finally we've decided that we're going to meet. So I'm flying to Vancouver. I've prepared everything. I have to make the most flawless first impression. I'm going to be stylish. I'm going to be charming, suave, and I am 6'4", so I've got the height thing going. I'm a reasonably good-looking guy. I got this. The flight is uneventful. Getting through customs, uneventful. Zoe meets me on the platform of the SkyTrain, and she is gorgeous. She's 5'11". She's got beautiful brunette hair, the most amazing eyes you've ever seen, and she's stunningly gorgeous. She's an artist. She's a creative. We get along really well. So she takes me back to her apartment and says, go ahead and unpack. I'll make something for you to eat. And as I'm unpacking, I realize my plan is already off kilter. I have no underwear except the underwear that I am wearing. How could I do this? How could I have forgotten my underwear? Hey, Zoe, tomorrow when we go into town, I need to buy some underwear because I forgot all mine. She laughs. And I know right then everything's going to be fantastic. I take a shower and we go to sleep. In the morning, I have a decision to make. I have a decision whether to just slip them back on, flip them around, recycle them, or go commando. Well, if I go commando, it's going to chafe. If I just recycle, that's kind of gross. If I flip them and recycle them, okay, I can do that. It's the least unpalatable of a solution. I'm ready. And it's November in Vancouver, so it's kind of cool. I've got a pair of running shoes. I've got a black leather jacket, a little Scully, pair of black jeans, and we're ready to go. And Zoe takes off. Like, she's an Olympic power walker, and I have no idea how I'm going to keep up with her. Hun, how far is this? Well, it's just over the hill. Okay. So I'm trying not to let her see that I'm dying, because she's a power walker and I am certainly not. But I am an American and I am stoic. I will not be cowed. We make it up to a stoplight and she's looking the other way and I'm breathing through my mouth, trying to catch my breath. When she looks over in my direction, I'm upright, breathing through my nose, and we keep walking. My glutes are now tight like walnuts, and there's a hamstring pain in my left leg that I can't shake. I'm still breathing through my nose. I'm not breathing through my mouth, but I'm sweating. And she's still going, and she's having a conversation. And all I can say is, mm-hmm, right, yes, I agree. At the light, she looks to the right. I exhale, and I catch my breath. And when she looks to her left, I'm calm. This goes on for 40 minutes. And finally, we're in downtown Vancouver. And there's the department store. And I am thankful. Thank God we're going to stop power walking. We enter the department store. And I see the signs that say where the men's department are. And that's the fifth floor. And I see this gentleman take a beeline toward us. And I say, huh. Now, again, I'm a 6'4" black man wearing a black leather coat, little scully, nice jeans, pair of respectable runners. And I recognize this guy as store security. I tell Zoe, honey, we're being tailed by security. No, we can't be. Yeah, babe, we are. As we go up the first escalator, he's four steps behind us. We hop off that landing and go up the next escalator. He's still behind us. He thinks I'm a shoplifter. Now, when we go on vacation, you go on vacation to escape some things. And now I'm getting pissed off because I'm in a foreign country and this guy thinks I'm going to steal. With every ascending flight, I am getting angrier. Now, here we are on the third floor on this landing and he switches out to another security professional, a loss prevention expert. In his cheap little polyester outfit, I can spot him a mile away, even though he's only three steps on the escalator below me. I'm absolutely livid. And Zoe sees this. She can't calm me down. When we get to the fifth floor, I take five steps off, and then I pivot around, and I get right in his face, and I say, can you help me find some underwear? And the guy is shocked. Shocked that I've made him. And he stumbles and he stammers and he doesn't know what to say. He's beet red and then he blanches white because he knows I know what he's doing. And he fidgets and stammers and stumbles his way to the counter where a young woman is going to help me. And he says, can you help him? And I say, thanks, you've done enough. And he doesn't make eye contact. And now here's where the fun begins. I don't need the little woman's help there. I have Zoe to help me pick out the underwear that I need. And she does admirably. I purchase the underwear. I keep the receipt. And I have it stapled to the bag. And I carry that out. And sometimes, the thing that you seek to escape is the thing that follows you everywhere you go. If I had only packed my underwear, I wouldn't be going through all this. And that's what chafes.
Well, that is one that we forget quite often.
Oh.
But, I have to say, I feel a little insensitive because I never thought about what it meant to have a receipt in your bag.
Oh, yeah.
Until more sensitive people said, yes, or someone went through that realization asking a black person, do you want your receipt? And they said, oh, yes, I must have that.
Absolutely. That's a that's your Willy Wonka golden ticket.
Yeah.
And because you can't argue with this.
All the
you can, but yeah. It's harder.
It's all the prejudice, you know, built in from years and years of the news, the this, the that, the other, the pictures. And I remember my former husband was taking a, he was going, we differed very much on guns and whether to possess a gun or not. And he was very pro-gun. I'm being from Texas still and very anti-gun. And so he said, I'm going to go take this class in learning how to shoot at people at night. And I'm like, why in the world do you want to shoot at people at night? And he shows me this picture of the advertisement for the class. And it has a black guy behind a shed. And I'm like, seriously, Mark, you're not going to pay money for that class. Okay. No money is coming out of our account for that class because look at how it's being depicted. Yeah.
Wow. That's a tough story. Ouch.
Yes. And that wasn't that long ago. That was within the last 10 years. It's there's just this constant subliminal message.
Oh, yes.
And I tell people you have to, you know, there's your overt prejudices that you know and recognize, but it's those subliminal ones, those unconscious biases that we're just trained with, which is unfortunate.
Oh, yeah, that's.
But I'm glad you focused this person head on.
The point is that when we tell stories, we can open up people's eyes in circumstances that are human in ways that an essay may not penetrate or me lecturing at you may not penetrate. Storytelling has a way of strumming the harmonic threads of our souls.
That's a beautiful way to put it. I'm going to use that again sometime.
So to make it a real thing. I told that story in the story of Heroes That Look Like Me about the Black G.I. Joe at an event in Geneva, Illinois. And a woman came up afterwards and said, I didn't understand the concept of representation until I heard it as a story from you. So now I get it. That's some of the most powerful praise that someone can ever bestow upon another, is that I understood more and better because of what I heard from you.
From your story. Yes.
Yes.
From your story. That is, definitely the power of story. Okay. I'm a diehard romantic. Zoe sounds wonderful. What happened to Zoe?
Well, that launches us into the next story, and I call this one Thrown for a Loop. So Zoe and I have been corresponding after this trip, and I went out to Vancouver a ton. She calls me and she says, I need you here with me. So I hop on the plane and she tells me when I get there, my toilet seat's broken. Now, Zoe is, again, a creative. She's 5'11". She's beautiful. She's an artist. She speaks multiple languages. She speaks Spanish. She speaks French. She speaks English, a little bit of Portuguese, some Thai. She's got mad skills. I speak English and the international language of guy, which means if you have a problem, honey, I can fix it. So that has us going the following day to Canadian Tire, which is this amazing shop where everything happens all at once with all kinds of products. And it's like what would happen if a Walmart exploded and no one knew where exactly anything was, which is kind of, I guess, redundant. We find toilet seats. We've just come down 16th Street to the Canadian Tire and we found toilet seats. And I'm about to say something and Zoe gives me this look. And she's an independent woman of the 21st century. She is strong. She is independent. She is powerful. She doesn't need my permission. And she doesn't need my advice. My lips are sealed. I have an idea, but I'm not going to say anything. And so she purchased it. And I'm carrying a toilet seat in a clear plastic bag up 16th Street. And people are looking at me and I'm happy because I'm with Zoe. I'll fix this. There's not a problem. When we get back, Zoe looks at this and says, Corey, you had an opinion about this. What was it? I was like, babe, you are an environmentally conscious person, and this is plastic. When you get up in the middle of the night, this is going to be cold on those tender parts. You're not going to like it. We could get you something else, like a wooden one, which is more environmentally conscious and it'll warm faster. She takes my counsel silently for a moment and then says, you know what? You're right. Now, I can't believe this. In the morning, we'll go back. And indeed, we do. That's how I find myself carrying that same toilet seat back in a clear bag down 16th Street to Canadian Tire. We exchange it and we get the wooden one. She likes it. Texture's nice. We're happy. I bring it back. And I get myself into some gear because I'm going to install it. Now, there's a couple of reasons why I chose that. I've already told you environmentally sound and it's going to be warmer. But since I speak the international language of Guy and I can fix that problem, I recognize that the previous one had an undercarriage and fastenings that would have required me to have an advanced degree from IKEA. And I did not have that. This one was far simpler. I've got this. I'm in some light workout gear. I look under her sink and there are chemicals with which I can sanitize the commode. And I do that. And I take apart the fastenings and remove the toilet seat, install the new one. The whole bathroom area is nice, clean, and shiny. Smells like disinfectant. And I say, babe, come check this out. She walks in and I say, my beautiful queen, look at your throne. I admit it's kind of corny, but I speak the international language of Guy. And she smiles. And I get up off the floor and I leave the room and shut the door so she can have a moment of privacy on her throne. She comes out a couple seconds later giggling just because it's fixed. She's made a wonderful meal, and I noticed that there's a little list of things next to my forks, and it's a number of things that she wants done around the house. One of them has to do with some little siding, and I take care of that. I pound out the nails and replace them, and I rehammer it into the wall so there's no hole between the wall and the flooring. And then there's a space behind her refrigerator that needs to be cleaned, and I take care of that. The list is easy, and I know she could have done these things by herself, but I do them for her anyway. And then it's time for her to come to Iowa. And she comes here, and she has a pretty good time. And this is January of 2020, and we are rescheduling when she's going to come back out, March 15th, 2020. The lockdown begins. The lockdown for a little virus that goes around the world, and I'm confronted by something I cannot fix. Zoe says, I need you here. And that's something I cannot fix.
That's terrible. And now I hate that virus even more.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I was trying to remember the horror of the feeling of the lockdown, and it felt like it would never end. And now I have a hard time conjuring up that feeling of desolation when I would drive across this empty highway to go to work and invited my daughter to go grocery shopping with me, but said we both have to wear gloves and glasses and masks. And I thought we looked like two bank robbers. on a mother-daughter trip. I mean, just
like Thelma and Louise.
You know, some of those moments, and my brother saying to me, when he would ask me how much longer, and I would say, oh, this would be in the summer of 2020. I would say, oh, this is not going to end this fall. This is going nowhere. And we don't have a vaccine yet. And he would just say, I just don't know if I can go on much longer. And I would say, but you have to. And now we've relaxed, but darn it, I am mad at that virus for you and Zoe.
Yeah, we're still friends, but I haven't seen her live in 3 years and change.
Yeah.
We're still friends, but the romance has just, that one hurts. That one hurts. Yeah. There were a lot of people who were hurt because of that. I mean, again, we talked about the emotional toll of cancer. There were tremendous emotional tolls that were taken on people by not being able to be close to their loved ones.
Oh,
and of all levels of love, whether that's parental love, sibling love, familiar love, romantic love, people's hearts were broken because of that.
Yes, it was quite something. And again, it's almost as though I can't think about it because I don't want to think about it. I don't want to remember that level of separation, that level of fear of, well, if I go out and do this and I get COVID, will I die? Will I give it to somebody else? You know, whenever I would have my allergies would act up, I would say, well, I need to go get tested because I work in a cancer center and there are a lot of immunocompromised people. And I don't want to be that person.
Right.
Brought it in. Yeah.
Exactly. So I can tell you that this past Thursday, I tested positive for COVID. And I have to say, I'm thankful that Zoom still exists so that we could do this. And tee hee, giggle, giggle, snort. You're safe because we're doing this over the computer and everything because the computers have antivirus.
That's right. They have antivirus software in them.
It's yeah. Cheap. I had to take it.
That was a good one. Well, I hope you're feeling better.
Oh, yes. But I should say, but because it's the numbers are starting to rise again. And I think everyone needs to pay attention and care for themselves. I'm not going to be that person that politicizes this, but people need to care for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I fly a lot and I have started wearing a mask through the airport as much as on the airplane. And I've read that the airflow on the airplane protects you more than you're protected in the airport.
Oh my.
I've had my shots and I'll be ready to get the next one. I also take vitamin D and I slather myself with Vicks VapoRub, which deep within me, I believe, protects you against everything because my mother slathered it with me with it every night. So
I can't argue with that. That'll keep you breathing.
Yes, yes. And I love the smell of it. Oh, well, thank you so much. These stories, and not just the stories, but your recognition of the harmonization across humans that stories bring. I loved that description of storytelling. That was wonderful. Now, you mentioned you just returned from a storytelling event in Chicago. Where will you be next?
On the weekend of the 24th, next weekend, I will be telling stories in Spring Grove, Illinois as well. I will do an MC portion, and then I will also be telling stories as well. And I am just thankful and blessed beyond measure to be telling stories and sharing these moments with people, being inspired by others to find other stories as well. This is just the most wonderful life.
It is. And you are a very talented storyteller. I've had a wonderful time. Everybody, please visit Corey's website at corrymay.com, K-O-R-Y-M-A-Y. Okay. And I've been to the website and I love the byline, the tall man with the short name.
Thank you.
That says it all.
I will be launching a podcast in October where I am discussing issues of race with a guy who is the polar opposite of me. And it's going to be called Same Difference.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Is that going to be on your website, or I'm going to find the link to the podcast on your website?
As soon as I have a link for that, it will be out and about so that you can get a hold of it.
Perfect. Perfect. So everybody, we will be back next week with more tellers and new journeys. You can harmonize with us again. But don't leave. Stay tuned into KPFT, because next up is Living Art with Michael Woodson and Michael Carson, a community art program that hosts artists from around Houston, including poets, writers, performance artists, visual artists, car artists, and others engaging in education, promotion, and advancement of the arts and artists in our Gulf Coast region. So now just chill. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just hanging, join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, remember, it's the journey, not the destination. Peace.
Hey.